Hey, it's Larry here, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, recording show number 289, which is this show, for Sunday, August 17th, 2008. I am sitting here with E, who's, what are you doing over there?
I am just enjoying being the fifth letter in the alphabet.
Right on. Okay. Well, welcome back, everybody. Well, you were all there. We were the ones that were away, or I was away.
You were away. I didn't go anywhere.
Traveling. We've been dark, as we say in show business, for a couple weeks. The show's been on hiatus.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Okay. The show's been on hiatus. So we've been on hiatus. I was at the Madden event. We'll talk about that. We got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. A couple of interviews. We got NPD numbers. We're going to talk about the Summer of Arcade, Madden event.
What we're playing.
What we're playing.
What we're playing that's frustrating us.
Yeah, frustrating us. But some good games are frustrating. Where do you want to start, E? You want to go down the whiteboard of the outline O to show? Or
we're not going to start with NPD numbers because my browser is still attempting to load them.
Okay.
So we should skip.
We'll come back
NPDs
to the NPD numbers. That's
that.
Fine.
Yeah.
We want to talk about Madden?
Sure.
So Madden event was Madden kicked off. Madden NFL 09 kicked off this week on sale on pretty much every platform under the sun. I was down at the launch event with Trixie and the staff from Inside Xbox. They were at the Rose Bowl. I've never been to the Rose Bowl. Have you been?
I have been to the Rose Bowl. It's a Pac-10 school. I've been to all Pac-10 football stadiums.
What a beautiful facility that is.
It's nice. It's kind of...
Part of it was it was a beautiful evening. It was a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful stadium. I don't like it for football because I'm biased.
Well, it is a football stadium. What do you like it for? Swimming?
No. It's great for other kinds of events, but the stands are so far away from the field that you're not that close.
Really? I thought they were pretty close.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Now, part of this is because of the stadium I'm used to, but I'm really biased. I like stadiums where the seats start as physically as close to the field as possible. And just because of the size of the Rose Bowl, the seats are a fair distance away from the field.
I'm trying to remember what the dome was like up at Syracuse.
Yeah. Do they have a track in Syracuse around the football
yes,
field?
Yes, they do.
See, that's one thing.
Well, I think if I remember correctly, in my day, they used to pull up the turf. Because it was fake, remember?
Because that's one thing. Any stadium that has a track around the football field, you're guaranteed you're starting an extra 10, 20, whatever feet farther away.
So.
And not a fan of football.
So we went down. I gave away tickets on the blog to Madden Palooza, which was the event. There was like hundreds of Xbox 360s there. People could show up. We had Good Charlotte was one of the many bands that was performing throughout the day. I saw Peter Moore.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He and I were comparing sunburns.
Did he have my Super Bowl tickets?
No, he did not. Mm-hmm. So, but
Peter.
I'm going to talk to him about that. But he was looking great. That's one of the first times I've talked to him. But that was one of the first times I've seen him since pretty much he left last year. So we did a quick little thing on Inside Xbox. The big news was the fact that between the last show that we did and this show was the Brett Favre trade.
Oh, yes.
So that was kind of crazy. Brett Favre traded from Green Bay to... was it considered a trade since he was...
It was a trade.
Okay.
He was traded
in exchange
for a draft pick.
So he's now at the New York Jets, and of course, he's the cover boy of Madden. And now they have this cool thing that I haven't printed out yet. You can print out Brett in a Jets jersey.
Yes. It's a new twist on the Madden curse.
Yeah, it's exactly. The Madden curse just keeps getting weirder and weirder, doesn't it?
Yep.
Now, we do have, we have a Brett Favre console, which I talked about last week, and I had people email me. So we're going to give that away right now.
Nice.
Let me pull up his name. His gamer tag is Captain Zesty, and...
Oh, wow.
He is from, coincidentally, he's from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Captain Zesty, congratulations. I'll be in touch with you. You got yourself an Xbox 360. You got yourself a great box with the hard drive, and it's all Brett Favre'd out.
So, really, Captain Zesty, not only did he get a draft pick back, but he's getting an autographed 360 in exchange
He's getting Brett Favre back, in a way, on the side of a console.
Very nice.
So, congratulations, Captain Zesty. We like to give stuff away on the show every now and then. Because what I try to do is, when I'm traveling a lot of, because I'm kind of quasi part of the media, I'll get a lot of things. I just want to give them right back to the audience.
You're quasi media?
Yeah, I am, but I don't ask.
Okay.
So I'm I get a lot of things that I come across, and I always like to collect them. I like to give them away on the show. I like to give away. I like to give back as much as I can. I don't want to keep all this stuff.
I suspect the listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, so I appreciate them. So, so the Madden event was really great. It was hot as heck down there in Pasadena.
Didn't you say it was 107 or something?
I don't know what it was. It was crazy. It was on the field. It was really hot. Once the sun went down, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. That I totally believe.
So we had a great time. You know, check out all the Inside Xbox videos. So that was Madden. I played Madden the other night. I did the Patriots against the Dolphins.
Oh, jeez. Talk about a gimme.
Yeah, so I played that and got a few gamer score, much to your chagrin.
I happened to check because I'm waiting for you to try and put this like secret lunge on to try and catch my gamer
score. Yeah, all of a sudden just put a sprint on.
Yeah, so every day I go to Xbox.com and I check,
right.
You know, compare E to Major Nelson.
Right.
Okay, I've still got a 1300 lead or whatever.
Right.
And I go to check and I hadn't played Madden yet, and you already had 120 or 130 gamer score.
Yeah.
So I had to that day play a game, and I got, I think, 6 achievements in the game, and now I've got more than you, so I'm happy.
So you feel better now.
It's football. I can't have you having more gamer score than me in a football game.
I agree. I agree.
It just would be wrong.
Did you get the did you get the regular edition or the limited edition? The one with the collector's edition?
The collector's, yes. That comes with NFL head coach,
yep.
I think it's called.
Yep.
Although I haven't had time to play that
yet. There's 3 discs in there. I mean, it's like this massive. And then there's like, they got a thing of all the different pictures of all the past covers.
Right. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a nice little thing.
It's a little scary to think how many versions of Madden I've owned on different platforms over the years.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a long way. So Madden was a lot of fun. Madden's in stores now, and I expect it'll be in the Xbox Live top 10 that I post each week on the blog at majornelson.com. So we'll look for that next week because it's usually hanging out there. So E, we've talked about MPD numbers, and hopefully your browser has gotten control of itself.
It did finally load. There was some stupid ad that was not loading, and it was just kind of sitting there waiting. But that finally resolved itself.
So MPD numbers were out this week, as usual. I think it's the third or fourth week of the month.
Something like
that. How do we do, E? Why don't you go through the numbers?
NPD for July. Here we go. It's kind of interesting. Hardware sales. Big down month from everyone compared to June. I think that's pretty typical. Not a whole lot of stuff releases in July.
Right.
So people, various hardware platforms were down anywhere from 6.9% to 44.5% down from the previous month.
Wow.
So the winner, I don't think this is going to surprise anyone, the DS.
Right.
608,000 sold.
Right.
I guess everyone doesn't have one yet. So
clearly not.
Although I got good use out of mine on Friday. I had to stop into the Department of Licensing to get new tabs for my car.
Right.
And I planned on, you know, I'm going to miss a little bit of work. I'm going to be there at 9 a.m., get in and out as quickly as possible, but brought my DS anyway.
Right.
It's a good thing because I was there at 9 a.m. I was still like 8th in line and had to sit there for 15, 20 minutes.
Oof.
But I had Civ on my DS, so that wasn't so bad.
All right.
Second place, the Wii, 555,000 sold.
Mm-hmm.
Third place, the PS3, 225,000 sold,
mm-hmm.
down 44%. But I guess that's because the MGS4 launch rush is mm-hmm. gone, so that's probably to be expected.
Yep.
PSP, 221,000. Xbox 360, 205,000. We're the ones who were only down 6.91%, so I guess yay. And PS2 finally starting to fall off, 155,000 sold.
Yeah, and this is actually everybody across the board was down relative in a month over month.
I mean, the only thing that, I mean, there were, I think, 2 big releases this month, and one of them's kind of a big mover, NCAA football. We'll get to software sales in a minute. The other one, at least for me, that was big, Civ came out. And then Soul Calibur at the very, very end of July. I think it was like the 29th or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So software sales. Number one title in July, according to NPD, NCAA Football on the 360, 397,000 copies sold. So that doesn't surprise me. It's the season is kicking off. NCAA is out there. Madden's out there. And we are rolling. Second place, We Fit.
Have you seen any of those in the store?
We Fit?
Yeah.
No.
I haven't seen any. I'm starting to see a lot of Wii's. I was at a Target in Southern California when I was down there. I went to someplace else. So I'm starting to see Wii's, but I haven't seen the Wii Fit.
I don't think I've ever seen a Wii Fit in store. And, I mean, generally, anytime we're in a mall, mm-hmm. even if we don't want to buy anything, we'll hit GameStop and just wander around and see what's new and talk to the guys and, hey, what's up? And,
right.
But, no, I don't think I've ever seen one.
Okay. So just FYI. Keep going down the list here.
So Wii Fit, Guitar Hero for DS. Wii Play, also known as how you get an extra Wiimote for your Wii.
Yeah.
NCAA on PS3, Soul Calibur 4 on 360, Mario Kart Rock Band Special Edition for the Wii, Soul Calibur 4 for PS3, and Civ Revolution for 360.
That's not bad.
The top 10. No.
Civ Rev in the top 10.
I'm glad to see that, that it's not just a, you know, cult classic that for people like me. I've seen a lot of people playing it, and I will definitely be coming back to it, but I got to break a few addictions first. So, the other thing we mentioned, sales-wise, we were going to talk about Tales of Vesperia in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Hell is frozen over.
Pretty much,
I think,
yeah,
is what the headlines were.
So this is a 360 exclusive JRPG. It's a sequel in a long line of successful JRPGs, the Tales series. And the Xbox 360 outsold the PS3 in Japan.
That's what I'm saying when I say hell is frozen over. People can't believe that one.
It was the total numbers. It was about 2.5 to 1 for that week. We sold about 25,000 360s compared to a little under 10,000 PS3s.
Wow.
Everyone had their butt kicked by the DS and the PSP, but right, that's to be expected in Japan.
We had a good time in Japan. In fact, I think I'm going to be going over to Japan for TGS.
Nice.
Assuming I can remember my passport.
Yeah. Tales of Vesperia moved 108,000 copies and was the fourth best-selling game in Japan that week. That's unheard of. So
looks like they like it.
Good for Xbox Japan. Good for the Tales guys.
All right, right on. So that's kind of a roundup of what the NPD numbers were for July. Thank you for going over those, Z. Do we have anything else that we need to? Do we have any other numbers we should talk about?
Those are the only numbers I can think. Now the next question is: do we want to talk Summer of Arcade before we get into the interviews?
That'd be a good lead-in. Actually, I was able to dig up some additional information that you may not be aware of. Like, for instance, this is kind of crazy. Consumers have spent more than $10.4 billion on the Xbox 360 platform, capturing 49% of the market, according to July NPDs.
Okay. Say that again?
Since its launch, consumers spent $10.4 billion on the Xbox 360 platform in the U.S.
Okay, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. So we also have a record-setting attach rate of 7.9 games per console. We've always had a pretty good attach rate. So anyway, there's some other stuff here. I'm sure you can do a web, open up your favorite browser and watch it.
And once the ad loads, then you can go in and
watch the ad loads on the very. Right. What else you got, E? You want to talk about what we're playing, or you want to? I got a couple interviews. We didn't talk. I said I had two interviews.
We should talk Summer of Arcade before the interviews, I think, because that leads into one of the interviews.
It tees them up nicely, as people say.
Do we want to do Summer of Arcade, but kind of leave out the fact that we're really heavily playing those and talk about that after the interviews? Did that make sense?
I don't understand what you're saying.
So let's run down where we are in the Summer of Arcade, what's coming up, run the interviews, and then talk about what we're playing, which will really heavily include the interviews.
Joining me on the line from San Francisco is software developer Mr. Jonathan Blow, who's responsible for last week's arcade title, Braid. Jonathan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on here. Unfortunately, I wanted to get you on last week, but I was involved with all this Madden craziness, but I'm glad we were finally able to connect this week and talk about Braid, because I've been having a great time with it.
Well, I'm glad that you have. You know, last week actually would have been crazy for me, because the game just came out last Tuesday, and the first couple days is madness,
yeah,
as you watch on the internet how everybody's receiving the game and everybody's sending email and all that stuff.
Yeah,
now things are starting to calm.
Well, this is the perfect time. So I want to thank you for taking some time out of your schedule. Let's back up a little bit and go through the game for maybe some folks. I mean, there's a free demo, so anybody who's on Xbox Live, there's absolutely no reason why you have not downloaded this game and given the demo a try. But why don't we go through, for maybe the people that don't have an Xbox 360, kind of explain what the game is, because when you look at it, it doesn't quite connect until you play it.
Right, so when you first look at it, what it appears to be is a 2D platformer in the style of games like Super Mario Brothers or that kind of old Nintendo game, or some of the games that used to be on the Commodore 64 like Jumpman or Hard Hat Mac or things like that. But it's done, visually in a style that would not have been possible back then. It's very high resolution, 720p, fully painted levels, in a painterly style with a lot of parallax and stuff. And then that's the first thing that you see. But as you start playing through the game, you realize that it's not really a platformer. It's more of a puzzle game. And the puzzles are about controlling the flow of time and using that to do things that are seemingly impossible. So, I don't know, maybe that's a good enough summary for
that. I think it probably is, because people are probably scratching their heads right now. Well, how do you control time? And you've done such a masterful way of explaining it and really using it. The way the levels progress, there's many levels in the game, but each level, each world has its own time-based mechanic, which is really fascinating. How you kind of, it's funny, once you kind of master one thing, then you go ahead and switch it up on me, and I got to learn something else.
Yeah, exactly. So the core control over time that you have is just the ability to rewind, right? So you press the X button, or you hold the X button, and as long as you hold it down, time goes backwards and you undo everything that's happened. And, you know, there's been a few games that have done that before, like Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, or Blinks the Time Sweeper, which was a game on the original Xbox. But those games didn't really make it the core of gameplay as much as they could. They were more conventional platformers where the rewind ability was something you could do usually to get your life back, right, so that you didn't die.
Right.
In Blinks, it went a little bit further. There were, like, some specialized puzzles that you could solve, but it wasn't really in the core of the game. So what Braid is about is everything is about this rewind ability, and in the first world that you visit, you learn the basics of how it works and how it can enable you to get through areas that would probably be too hard to solve in a regular action platformer just because the jumps are really hard to make, or you know, just through experimentation, you would end up dying a lot. But from there, it branches out and starts getting stranger and more interesting and also giving you more control over things. So pretty soon you end up in a world where you still have this rewinding ability, but suddenly there are magically glowing objects that aren't subject to that ability, right? They're not under your control, but paradoxically, that can give you more control over the overall situation, because now you can manipulate how this set of objects that's immune to you interacts with the rest of the world. It's an abstract thing to try to explain, but you know, you start playing the game and it clicks, I think.
Yeah, and it kind of comes through really quickly.
Yeah, there's further levels like the world after that. So in the free demo, what you get is the full initial world where you can rewind at will. You get the first couple of levels of this world where some objects are immune, and that changes things. And then the next world, which you can also get, I think, two levels of, is a world where you can still rewind, but then there's also a different time manipulation going on always, which is that time is frozen naturally, but if you walk to the right, time goes forward, and if you walk to the left, time goes backward. And even though it's built on the same core mechanics, with this one change, everything feels very different. You know, the dynamics of the level are different, and the way that you solve puzzles is different now because you can't wait for things to happen anymore, because things will never happen unless you move.
Yeah.
And that does give you more control over the whole world. It feels strange and magical and kind of creepy how you can affect everything in the world at once that way. But it also, at the same time, adds a constraint, because you need to figure out how to move around in space in order to control time.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually one of the levels that I'm at right now, where you're moving forward, and you're like, oh, I can solve this puzzle, and all of a sudden you start moving to the left of the screen, and all of a sudden you just undid everything that you did. And it's a little unnerving, because it's still, you know, I got to be honest with you, the game kind of made my head hurt for a while, and it's like, oh my God, what is going on here? And it's one of those games that the hallmark of any good video game in my mind is where you get so frustrated that you walk away and you can't stop thinking about that puzzle, and then you can't wait to get back to it to try to solve it. And that's kind of what I've noticed with Braid, is that it's got all the hallmarks of that, and more importantly, I must congratulate you. I mean, it is the highest ranking game on Metacritic right now. I mean, that's extraordinary. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised, actually, at all the reviews that have come in highly positive about the game, because, you know, obviously when I was making it, I wanted it to be a good game, and it's a kind of an experimental game, right? Like, the game mechanics aren't something quite that you've seen in another game before, and I wanted it to be a very personal and emotional game, right? But at the same time, those things all put together make it not very much like the games that people usually play. So I figured some people would say, oh, this game is great, and give it high scores, but other critics would say, this isn't really, this game isn't really for that many people, or it's a little weird or whatever, and we'd give it low scores. And that actually hasn't happened.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't think there's a single, unless it happened in the past couple hours, there's not a single score on Metacritic that's below 80, and there are only three that are below 90 out of, 27 reviews. So they're all, almost every review is 90 and up.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I couldn't have expected that.
I mean, when you go look at Metacritic, in fact, I'm going to pull it up right now. I was looking at it just in preparing for this interview, and I mean, your game is up there amongst, Halo 3, BioShock, Grand Theft Auto. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, on the top 10. I actually have some friends at Harmonix, and a couple of days ago, the Metacritic for Braid was 92. And it was right below Rock Band and Guitar Hero 2, which is our games that Harmonix developed.
Right.
And I teased them, if I get one more Metacritic point, I'm going to be above you guys on the rankings. And I didn't think it would happen, because usually Metacritic scores for games fall over time.
Right.
But then I got the extra point, and I was at 93. So
yeah, I'm looking right now, and as we record this, you're at 93. Guitar Hero is below you. I mean, the games, let me just back up. The games that are above you is Grand Theft Auto, BioShock, The Orange Box, Gears of War, Oblivion, COD4, Halo 3, Braid, Guitar Hero 2, and that's the top 9. That's the top 8, and then Guitar Hero and Rock Band round out the top 10. So I mean, you're in some extraordinary company, and they're all very different games. I mean, yeah, we've got some shooters and so on and so forth, but the fact that Braid has come along and kind of almost, and I know this is a bold statement, but you've kind of redefined the platforming genre in a way that kind of people maybe have forgotten about 2D platformers. But you've done something that's very interesting, is you've really revitalized, and people are maybe going to go back and look at some old platformers.
Yeah, and we're talking about this game is high on the rankings and stuff, and that's cool. And I don't want it to be a kind of ego thing, right? But I do think it's cool that, a game which was essentially made pretty much by two people. If you look at in the credits, there are about five people who made concrete contributions on the game, and then, of course, anything that's being published by Microsoft actually has a bunch of people behind the scenes at Microsoft who help with testing and localization and all that. But in terms of the core game, one person did all the design and programming and production, and another person did, almost all of the graphic art. And then a couple other guys helped out a few weeks each, drawing some character animations and adding some sounds and doing a little extra programming, but very small team, right? And that it was possible for this very small team to make a very critically acclaimed game that a lot of people are interested in. And, I'm hoping that moving forward, more teams see, hey, if they can do it, we can do it too, right? We can also, just a couple of people, make a game that's different from what people expect, but that's something that they'll really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think that, actually, if you look at those Metacritic ratings, Geometry Wars 2, which came out just 2 weeks ago, and obviously has had, great reception on Xbox Live, that's also in the top 10 right now, or last I checked, with a 90 Metacritic. Yeah. And even though that's backed by a large company, if you look at the credits of that game, again, a small number of people are responsible for it. So I think it's this interesting shift where now that consoles have matured to a certain extent, and development tools have gotten pretty good, and just that we've reached a certain stage in game development, it's a time when small teams really can bring a lot to the table and play on the same field again. So that's nice, and I'm hoping that we see more of it.
As am I. I want to talk to you a little bit about the look of this game that David Hellman developed. I mean, it was really magical. When I started playing it, I get completely sucked into this Rembrandt-esque world.
Yeah, it's the look of the game is something that we agonized over for a long time. What you see on the screen is not everything that we did. We went through a lot of concepts for everything. Threw out a bunch of them. Sometimes we would go and start developing an entire world and think that we're 3/4 of the way through, and then decide, oh, it's not working. We have to scrap this and start over. But the upshot of that, or the upside of that, is that the end result we're pretty happy with. And actually, David Hellman has a blog where he's posted this series called The Art of Braid, and he showed you all the way back from the programmer art that I gave him, which is really, really ugly, how the concepts evolved and what we were thinking about as we adjusted the look of the game and what our concerns were. And it's a pretty good read, actually.
Yeah, I'll definitely link off to that. The other thing I want to point out is that I linked off on my blog, or I think I even Twittered this, was the brilliant quote-unquote walkthrough that you posted on the Braid blog. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, some people got mad at that, actually, because you can imagine if somebody's playing the game and they're frustrated on a puzzle and they want to know the answer now because they've tried and they can't get it, and they go on the web and like they're, okay, I'm finally going to see the answer to this, and they start reading the walkthrough, and not to spoil the walkthrough, but it's not quite as forthcoming with answers as people would like.
As the title would suggest.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I'm sorry for whoever that made mad, but I honestly think that the walkthrough is what the walkthrough recommends, which is not to actually use a walkthrough and to just sit down and solve the puzzles yourself, is the best way to approach the game. And I know that sometimes these days people are in very completionist mindsets where they want to race through a game, but a lot of Braid is actually not about what happens on the screen. It's about what happens in your head while you're playing it. And to skip over that part and just to see the answer and execute it, I think disposes with a lot of what is valuable about the game and what's different about this game and what has caused critics to really respond to it, for example. So, yeah, I mean, for anyone out there listening, if you're going to get this game and play it, you might be thinking every once in a while, oh, I'm going to go on the web and search for an answer to this puzzle because I don't, you know, it's been 10 minutes and I don't get it. But don't do that. You know, the game is structured so that if you don't understand a puzzle right now, if you're not quite getting it, unlike most games, you can just walk past the puzzle.
Yeah.
Go to a different one. Different puzzles later in the game might give you ideas about earlier puzzles, you know, because they use some of the same concepts in a different way, and you might solve them. Or even, I've had a lot of people tell me directly or else post on forums that they were stuck on something, they just didn't get it, and they were getting a little frustrated, and they just took a break. You know, they went away for 20 minutes and got a sandwich or something, or just took a nap. And when they woke up, like, their subconscious mind had been working on it, and they just knew the answer as soon as they sat down in front of the game without even trying. So it's interesting to have that kind of experience, that magical thing where it just clicks in your head. And that's something that I hope people get out of the game. And that walkthrough was an attempt to discourage people from losing that experience.
I appreciate that. Now, I'm talking with Jonathan Below, who's the man behind the arcade title Braid. Jonathan, do you think what you just described is just the fact that a lot of society right now is all about the instant gratification, and they want the answer now?
Well, perhaps. I mean, certainly modern society is very convenience-driven, but game design especially is that way. You know, there's been this trend. You know, Braid is a pretty difficult game, for example. Some of the puzzles are just hard, and there aren't hints in the game. The way in which the game is nice is that it's not always trying to kill you, and there's no game over, right? You can never lose Braid at all.
Right.
But that's fortunate for how hard some of the puzzles are, right? And that's going against many of the trends in game design, which is to make games actually pretty easy, but to feel like they're hard. Like, to feel like, you know, if it's a first-person shooter, for example, to feel like all these guys are dangerous and they're going to kill you, but in reality, to make it that you're not in danger and you can just shoot them all so that you feel powerful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting thing to do. Like, that's an interesting kind of game to make, but I feel like there's an oversaturation of that kind of game now, and people aren't getting enough of another thing, which, again, is maybe why some people responded to Braid the way they did. Like, everybody's got different reasons for who likes the game, they've got different reasons for liking it. And everyone who dislikes it has different reasons for disliking it. But there are certain, you know, cultural shifts that happen. And I think maybe people are getting a little bit sick of the kind of fake challenges being kind of on a rail through games where if there's a puzzle, you know, in an action game, you know that the game is going to pretty much tell you how to solve the puzzle, or that it's not going to be that hard. Because if it was hard, you wouldn't be able to get to the end of the story, and everyone wants to get to the end, right?
Yeah.
And Braid is different from that. So, yeah.
I want to talk for a moment about, we talked about the look of the game. I want to talk about the music, because this is all music that you licensed from, I believe it's Magnatune, is that correct?
That's right.
And, I mean, some of this music almost feels like it was written specifically for the game, when in fact it wasn't. I mean, it was really, it's really complimentary the way that you've taken the music and complemented the gameplay and the visuals and the puzzles.
Yeah, and, you know, I had an idea for what I wanted the mood of the game to be, right, both visually and in terms of audio. And, you know, I wanted it all to work together with the level design. And I just listened to a lot of songs and developed an idea of what I wanted the soundtrack to be like. There are various websites where you can go and license songs for a reasonable price, but it turned out that Magnatune had all the music that I wanted, and some of the other sites just, they weren't in the same kind of zone. And so, you know, I ended up only licensing, there are 8 music tracks in the game. They're all pretty long, because one thing that I wanted was for music not to repeat, right? Mm-hmm. If you think back to old school platformers, often they would have a 30-second song or whatever that loops, and that would easily drive people crazy nowadays, especially in a game like Raid, where you might sit in a level for many minutes just thinking about something and looking at the screen. You don't want this very simple melody like drilling in your head. So the songs are all very organic. You use a lot of strings like cello and violin, and there's a little bit of harp. But they're long and they're complex, and they maintain themes through the music, even between songs, because I license songs from the same artist sometimes. Mm-hmm. But they don't exactly repeat, and so I think it gives a good sense of cohesion while still giving the player variety.
They also, because of the rewind nature of the game, when you do the audio scrub, which is when you hear the audio kind of playing backwards, it's also not jarring. It's actually rather pleasing.
Yeah, and that was another idea behind the musical choice, was that I wanted music that sounds differently forward and backward, and that sounds differently when it's played slow versus fast, to amplify that feeling of the flow of time changing. And it turns out there are some musical instruments that don't sound that different, you know, backwards mm-hmm. versus forwards. And mm-hmm. so it was an interesting exploration to find out what was the best sonic texture for the game.
Yeah, because that's something that really comes through. Now, before I let you go, I just want to talk about the puzzles themselves. We've been talking about them all the way through. How did you come up with these puzzles to make sure that someone was going to be able to solve them? I mean, because as you said earlier, when you're playing a first-person shooter, person has to go from point A, beat a bunch of enemies, and get to point B and kill the boss. This one's dramatically different, because you had to make sure that the user, you know, as I'm playing it, that I could make that jump to that platform if I was rewinding time or something like that. That must have been a real mind bender for you as the developer of the puzzles.
It was more fun than playing a puzzle game, definitely, because it's like solving a really hard puzzle, figuring out what is the best puzzle here. But, you know, I'll tell you kind of the philosophy I had, which is, for anyone who remembers old-style, you know, text adventures or point-and-click adventures later on, you know, from the 80s or the 90s, I always loved that genre of game. It was very puzzle-oriented, very interesting, but they always had this problem where very often the puzzles would be totally illogical. You know, it's like I have to attach the chewing gum to, like, the string to stick it down in a grate that I didn't think that anything would be there in order to get some object that I don't know why I need it for the second half of the game, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they were full of things like that where you had to basically read the designer's mind. And I wanted to stay away from that and create puzzles that were natural and that were fair and that made sense. And so with Braid, you know, as we said, the fundamental idea is that the flow of time changes in every world. And in the process of designing the puzzles for me was to look at that new behavior of time and say, you know, what are the natural consequences of this? You know, have a little bit of a spoiler. This isn't much of one, but, you know, say you've got some clouds in a level and there's a gap between them that's too big to jump. Well, if one of them is immune to being rewound, then that means that you can change the distances between the clouds by rewinding, because one of them will go forward and one of them will go backwards, right? And that can close a gap, right? That's an immediate and natural consequence of being able to rewind. But at the same time, that people wouldn't have thought of in advance, probably, right? But it's observable, and you can observe it and react to it, right? And so the puzzle design in Braid is all about illustrating what are the natural consequences of the laws of each of these many universes that you travel to. And because of that, because I was trying to keep them as simple as possible while still being interesting, Mm-hmm. And simple doesn't mean easy, right? Because some of the puzzles are really hard, but there's only like two places to stand on the screen and then a puzzle piece and like one monster. And you're like, how? It's impossible. It looks impossible to get that thing, but it's actually possible. And that's also what makes it fair, is because it's all based on things that you can observe and play with. It's not, you know, game design, random objects, read my mind voodoo. At least I think.
And not only that, but then on the backdrop of this whole thing is there's actually a pretty interesting story that you're telling with the lead character.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to talk too much about what the story is about, but, sure. You know, I tried very hard to make it a rich story, but that's also told in a different way than most games do, right? Part of the original idea behind this game was going to be that it's a hybrid of a video game and a book, right? Most people who try to tell stories in games, you know, they'll often use cutscenes, and so it's kind of a hybrid between a video game and a movie, right? Or sometimes they'll use little intro cards, but this was, I definitely approached the fiction from a very literary direction, you know, having a literary sense of what writing is about and how it works. And, you know, as a result, the story isn't necessarily as clear-cut as we're used to in games. Mm-hmm. It leaves a lot more open to inference and interpretation, but a lot of people seem to like that. Some people don't. Some people say, oh, I just didn't understand the story. I didn't get it. And that's cool. You know, hopefully they like the gameplay.
The story adds a different dimension. So we talk about Tim, who's searching for a princess, and that's not giving much away. But I want to ask you a question. I don't want to give away any more than that. But in the demo, you come up against a dinosaur. Does the dinosaur have a name?
No, not really.
Okay.
I could probably make one up on the spot.
No, but I don't.
In my head. Well, he has, if you look in the game code, he's just called the greeter.
Oh, I see.
He greets you at the end of the level, but he's not named.
But that's good to know. All right, well, listen, I'm going to let you go. Jonathan Blow, I appreciate you taking the time. Congratulations on shipping Braid. It's been an enormous success on Xbox Live Arcade, as well on Metacritic, and hopefully we can see something like this from you again in the future.
In a few years, maybe. These things are hard to make. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Joining me from Capcom Japan is Ben Judd, who's the producer for this week's arcade title, Bionic Commando Rearmed. Ben, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure to have you. I know a lot of folks are excited. Bionic Commando Rearmed is part of the Summer of Arcade, and it's got to feel good. You shipped the game this week, and it's getting pretty good reviews, isn't it?
Yeah, I was surprised, but IGN gave us a 9.4 and said it's the best Xbox Live Arcade game they've played, and that's saying a lot, especially since your summer lineup, like you said, is pretty incredible. It's like just great game after great game, so it's an honor to be included in that.
Yeah, it's really good. So why don't we, can you give us a little bit of a history for maybe some of the uninformed listeners of where the Bionic Commando franchise has come and kind of a little bit of backstory?
Yeah, sure. Bionic Commando was a game that was first developed over here in Capcom Japan around, I think it was 1987 is when the production started. And back then the development cycles were about 3 to 6 months, so they were cranking out games really quickly. It first came on the scene with an arcade game, which was somewhat popular, more popular actually in Europe than it was in North America. But then after that, where it hit some really true success and gained a lot of momentum was they had a Nintendo, an 8-bit version of it that was very popular because it first introduced the mechanic of being able to do multiple swings a la Spider-Man. It was developed around the same time as Mega Man 2, and so I know that both of those teams worked together and exchanged ideas back and forth. So it's really interesting to be over here working at Capcom Japan and being able to talk to the people that were working back then and just hear what sort of ideas, the competition that was going between the two teams, et cetera. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's also something I want to point out, Ben, is you're actually on the phone with me via satellite probably over to Japan. So you're actually living and working right there at the hub of all the activity in Capcom Japan. That's got to be pretty exciting for you as a gamer.
I have to admit, when I first got here, I was very starstruck. It was like, wow, this producer made this game, and you know, it just it really was an amazing experience. But surprisingly enough, after you live here for that long, it starts to fade, and now it's just like, wow, Japanese summers are hot.
How long have you lived over there?
If you consider my pre-Capcom days, it was about 4 years, and then since I joined Capcom about 4 years, so about 8 years of my life, quite a big chunk.
That's pretty extraordinary. Well, hopefully you're making, it sounds like you're making the adjustment well, and it sounds like a lot of fun, but I want to get back to Bionic Commando. So the game is out this week. Of course, there's a free demo available with every Xbox Live Arcade title. Folks can download that, and if they want to purchase it, it's 800 points. It's kind of an interesting game because I saw some people confused. They're like, why is there no jump? So they were a little confused around that. So I'll let you explain that for the uninformed.
I'm glad you asked that, actually, because it's one of the points where I've been looking at some of the reviews, and some of them actually criticize it for not having a jump, which suggests that they just don't understand what the basic concept of the game was. Of course, as I mentioned, it came out. On hardware that only had, you know, basically two major buttons to work with. So if one is shoot, the other one has to be jump was the standard. But the team said, you know, we want to do something different. We intentionally don't want to have jump in there because that's what every other game before that had. They wanted to be innovative. And I think that they paid a bit of a price for it because it does have a bit of a learning curve. And unless you start thinking, no, I don't jump over pits. I have to take my arm and hook it onto a rooftop or a ceiling, and then I swing across the pit. Until you get the basic controls, if you just approach it as a 2D side-scrolling game with a jump function in it, then you would be totally lost. So I kind of really respect the team back then for taking such a huge risk, and I think that's why this title stands out in all the great classics I played when I was a child, is because it took a while to get, but once you got it, you could do amazing things that you could not do in any other 2D side-scrolling game.
And that's interesting because you talk about that. I mean, let's be clear. When Bionic Commando came out, that was 1988. That was 20 years ago. So it's been
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that either, but I was just doing some research before we started the call, and I'm like, wait a minute, 20 years ago, that's extraordinary. And the fact that now you've gone through and you've updated a lot of the looks, the visuals, I'll talk to you about that in a minute, but it's really come a long way, hasn't it, in 20 years?
Yes, it has, and I think I've found that there is a movement right now of people that are certainly in my age group, 30s, whatever. And we've played a lot of 3D games, of course, in the past, and a great 3D game, you know, high production values and everything is great. But we sort of miss the old 2D classics of yesteryear. There's just, I think, a strong retro movement that's begun. I think this title helped kick it off. I think you're going to see more and more of this in the future with companies putting more time and energy into just polishing those old classics because they did a lot of things right, which is why they stick with you for so long. But they also did, you know, a few things wrong, or there were some technical problems that they couldn't have gotten over back then that they can now. So I just think that even though it's been 20 years, this right now is the sweet spot for nostalgia, for going back and enjoying those old games.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we talked about the Summer of Arcade, which is a fantastic lineup of games. But when people dig down, they realize that two of the four games are actually platformers. I just talked to Jonathan Blow about his hit Braid, and that, in its essence, is a platformer. And here we are with something that is entirely different, Bionic Commando Rearmed, which is also a platformer but uses a completely different style of dynamics.
Yeah, I just think that Xbox Live Arcade is going to start getting more and more depth. I know initially people thought there were too many shooters, but obviously, as you mentioned with Braid and now with Rearmed, and I'm sure some of the future titles are going to start heading in that direction. I just think that the creators have hit their stride. They're willing to take chances. They're starting to go into different genres that before they didn't. So I think it's just going to keep getting better and better from here on out.
Talk to me a little bit about the look of the game, because it's got a really unique look that, you know, it's not 8-bit clearly. I mean, it's using the full high defness of the Xbox 360, but it really has a fun look about it.
Yeah. When we first started designing it, there was actually some talk about doing some sort of cell-shaded look or maybe a filter on top of it, maybe something in the direction of Braid. But ultimately, we decided we really, as a homage to the series, we really wanted to pay respect to the original games like color palette and stuff. And so you really get these vibrant, like red burning sky and like some of the levels, and some of them use really, like the first level, for example, has yellow bricks and red platforms just very kind of unique to what you'd think like a building would look like. And partially that was because back then on the 8-bit color palette, they had to stick out with, they had to go with like major colors that would pop off the screen. But I just think that even today, with the millions of colors we can choose from, going in that direction does make it stand out, does give a unique visual feel. And then on top of that, Grin, the developer on the project, they are using a lot of the same 3D filters, shaders, and effects that are actually going into the big budget 3D production as well. So, I mean, it's they put a lot of time, love, and energy into it, and I think it shows from a visual design perspective.
Yeah, the title has a real nice, you know, as you're playing it, has a nice depth to it as well, so it doesn't feel like a flat 3D or 2D scroller. There's actually, it feels like there's a little bit more depth there. It's kind of fun to play around, and I'm looking forward to kind of working my way through the various levels. Tell us what we can expect in the levels and some of the level design and what your philosophy was going into that.
Obviously, it was, we wanted to pay respect again to the original, and so I would say that the game is probably about 90 to 95% like the original, but of course, anytime you switch over from blockier, bigger pixels to a, you know, high-definition setup, it's going to kind of throw off the design a bit, so of course, they had to do some minor tweaks. However, one of the things I'm really proud and excited that they added where it was, there are a lot of different secrets. Just like an extra platform here that wasn't in the original one, or like falling down a pit and you can swing off below it and there's another secret room in there. There's some areas to explore, and I always felt that the original game kind of missed that opportunity because using that arm, it's a movement mechanic and it's a skill-based mechanic. If you could get a platform that required a really tight swing to get over there and then find a secret, then the user will probably feel very rewarded for doing that. So they've added in those bits and pieces, which are great. And then on top of that, there are about, I think, four new levels that were never in the original game. And, man, they are hard. They are really, really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you talked about some of the secrets, and I actually have never talked about this before, but I am actually in this game. There is a major...
You are.
So why don't you explain that a little bit, and I'm not going to tell people how to get it quite yet, but I want you to explain a little bit about what that's about.
Well, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you, as we're creating it, we're like, it'd be nice to have some kind of tie-up with Microsoft, because they've been very supportive with us, and we're like, well, maybe we could get some kind of a famous person in there. And there was some poll, I guess, for like the most famous people in the gaming industry, and I think you were number one. Not
oh
to pad your ego or anything.
Good God.
you were up there, certainly, and so the idea came out, you know, maybe we could get Major Nelson to be in the game. And people were like, no, he's not going to say yes to that. And we, of course, threw the idea over to you, and surprisingly enough and very happily, you accepted. And so the game actually features these, they're simulated swing, like virtual reality type based challenge rooms is what we call them. There's over 50 in the base game, but there's actually a special Major Nelson challenge room that is only on the 360. And you have to put, of course, you'll tell them the people how to access that room.
Yep.
But it's got a message from you, and I believe it's got a pixelated version of your beautiful, beautiful face.
I believe there's an 8-bit rendering of me. And I, to be honest with you, I started, you know, we worked on this about 8 or 9 months ago, it feels like. So I completely forgot about it until I remember, you know, until the title came out. I'm like, wait a minute, I think I'm in this game. I was really excited about it because I've never seen any of the artwork. So I am going to tell people perhaps later on in the show how they can figure out how to discover the 8-bit Major Nelson. And I was so pleased to be asked. I'm thrilled and honored to be part of this, to be part of the game. Because, again, this is I remember playing this game, as we said, 20 years ago, and it was just the mechanic was so wonderful. So I'm so thrilled to be part of this game, and I want to thank you for that.
No, thank you. I know that the stage itself is not easy, and so it's going to be one of those things for bragging rights, which is kind of what we wanted to do.
Right.
So I'll be curious, Larry, if you'll be able to actually beat the stage yourself or not.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be the ultimate challenge.
It's questionable whether even I can actually beat it, which is completely right, because I may not be able to do it and see myself. So it'll be maybe a little while about that. I want to talk a little bit about some of the updated weapons that we can discover in the game, and some of the new weapons as well. Tell me about that.
We tried to base a lot of them on the original weapons, but if you think of the original game itself, it kind of had a broken system, which you could only select one weapon per level. And the bazooka was clearly the strongest weapon. Once you got that, that was the only weapon you ever used for the whole game. So we had to go in there and balance some of the weapons. We have, of course, the original, you know, shooter, the original pea shooter that the character starts out with. And it actually is accurate like the original was. You can only shoot two bullets on screen at once. But then we went into things like the bazooka and we're like, that was too powerful in the original game, so we're going to make it move a little bit slower. It's still going to have the same damage that it did from the original game, but if you shoot something too close to you, it'll explode and you'll take damage. So you have to be more careful with it. And then on top of that, we tried to add little features into some of the other weapons. For example, we've now added a shotgun, which is it kind of replaces the three-way cannon, which kind of had a very large, like wide but short blast radius mm-hmm. to it. Mm-hmm. With the shotgun, if you're connected to a ceiling or something and you fire, it will let you start to swing. Like before, if you ever got connected to a ceiling and you were, like, if you had retracted your arm, then you were pretty much stuck. You had to drop, and if you were above spikes or a pit or whatever, you would die. But at least with this, if you have the shotgun, you fire, it kickstarts you, and then you can swing from there to save yourself. So
that's a lot of help. I mean,
it helps. It helps a lot.
So I, you know, the other thing that a lot of folks are excited about is the fact that we've got multiplayer, you know, right on the same box, so we can do you can do kind of co-op on the same box, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So that's you know, a nice two-player experience, because there's we need a lot more games like the two-player local experiences.
Yeah, I know there's been some of the fans have been disappointed that there's not online, because unfortunately you guys with Xbox Live Arcade have created the golden standard of playing online, and obviously Xbox Live Arcade is fun when you can do voice chat, etc.
Right.
But the original design was something where we had only intended to do a single-player game, and we'd only actually intended to do half of the original game. But as we were making it, we liked it so much, we started to put more and more into it. And then one day, one of the programmers stuck a second main character in the game, and two people were able to play, and they were having so much fun. They're like, you know what? Let's actually have two people. Let's have co-op mode in this. And of course, as soon as we saw that, we saw the potential. We're like, well, let's try and make it online. But unfortunately, they had already actually come about halfway through the production, and trying to retrofit web code on top of a game that's been basically designed as a single-player experience from the ground up is very dangerous and sometimes not possible at all. So even though everybody realized the potential and realized that some people would be disappointed for it not being in there and, you know, possibly lose potential sales, which is not a good thing, of course, we couldn't do anything other than, you know, throw it in there sort of like as a bonus mode. So we had the option of keeping it in there and hoping that people would be happy that at least they could play it locally, because, you know, playing games co-op locally is how we did it 20 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
Or, you know, removing it entirely just so that we could avoid maybe some of the negative comments. But in the end, we went with keeping it because it truly is a unique and fun experience, I think. So I hope that ultimately people will appreciate that.
I know people, like I say, you said some people are disappointed that it's not in there, but I want to thank you because I think, because, you know, you guys made the decision, if you can't do it right, then we're not going to include it. Because, I mean, we've all played games that maybe have a multiplayer that kind of feels tacked on at the end only so they could have that checkbox in the reviewers. But you guys kind of said, you know what, we're not going to do that. So I want to thank you for keeping it pure.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It's nice to hear that.
Yeah, I know, because like I say, when I was playing, it was so nice, and I played a little bit of co-op, and it just felt right. And like I say, we've all played those games that probably shouldn't have done that, so it was a lot of fun. Now, we talked about the visual style a little bit. Now, this was one of you actually had one of Capcom's most talented designers work on this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about him and what some of the games that maybe some people know that he's done?
Okay. He has told me not to tell his first name.
Okay.
He likes to be known sort of like the Madonna or Cher, if you will,
or
of
Prince.
The game design. So his name is actually Shinkiro.
Okay.
That means mirage in English. And he was a lead designer or artist, if you will, in SNK. And then probably about 10, 15 years ago, a lot of those guys moved over to Capcom. We were very fortunate to pick him up. So He's done a lot of art on the Street Fighter series. He actually has done, I think, some American comic book covers as well. And when I talked to the head of the design team over here, I was like, we need somebody that can give us a touch that feels a little kind of like anime, Japanese-esque, but yet is more like a hard, like, American comic book sort of style. And he was the right man for the job, obviously, because the art is fantastic. And, of course, for anybody who's going to pick up the gamer icons or the themes, that art is also prominently displayed as well, and it's really, really nice.
Yeah, those are available for download off the Xbox Live Marketplace. There's a whole bunch of themes and gamer pictures up there as well. So it's you know, for people that want to continue their Bionic Commando experience, then they can go ahead and do that. Are you guys really, you know, we've had such Capcom has had a lot of success with arcade and so forth. I assume you're going to be doing many more titles with it.
With arcade, of course. I think. What arcade has done, and I don't think enough people realize, because this is definitely, in my mind's eye, one of the 360's biggest successes, is that you have given developers the option of creating games that they otherwise would not have been able to in a package game-only world, in a retail chain-only world.
Right.
I love 2D games, and 2D games like this, we could never slap a $50 or a $40 price tag on, put out, and have people buy them. Some of the fans would, of course, but they would probably not sell to the point that they needed to be profitable. So having this option is something that is allowing creators to create the type of games they want to create, and that is a win-win situation for both the consumers and the creators.
How long, you know, you talked about early on in the conversation a few minutes ago, you were telling me about that there was like a 6-month development cycle, or it was even less in some cases back in the old days. How long was the development cycle for Bionic Commando Rearmed?
Bionic Commando was, I think the original Mega Man was 4 months. Mega Man 2 was 3 months.
Wow.
And I think Bionic Commando was considered a long one because it was 5.
Yeah. That was pretty. And then, of course, the Rearmed, you guys probably worked on it for about 8 or 9 months, correct?
Yeah, it was about 10, I think, in the end. It was longer than we had hoped, but ultimately, again, we started to love it more and more, and you start putting in more time than you expected. But, yeah, it was about that much.
And then we've got you all queued up with the Summer of Arcade, so I'm going to let you go, Ben. I appreciate you taking the time and out of your busy day over there in Japan at Capcom Japan. Hopefully I'll run into you when I come over to TGS this year.
Yes, you will. I'm going to be on stage doing something really crazy, so please come over and say hello.
We'll definitely do that. So Ben Judd, producer from Capcom Japan, who's responsible for Bionic Commando Rearmed, I want to thank you for a great title. Thank you for my 8-bit representation that I have yet to see, and hopefully I will see. I'm going to have to survive that as well, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, man.
Sounds good, Larry.
So there you go. Bionic Commando Rearmed. Available now, Braid available now, and then E. You also, we were stepping away from the mics for a minute there, you realize that we missed one.
Yeah, I was, as we were running down the list of the arcade games, I was thinking in the back of my head, aren't there 5 games? Aren't there 5? And yeah, there are 5. So we now, did miss one.
Now, E. You were not able to sit here and listen to the Bionic Commandos interview.
I did not listen to that. No.
But so what you missed was the fact that we talked, and you don't know this, you and I have not talked about this. This is a surprise.
Okay.
Is that there's a, if you do something special in the game, there's a challenge room. There is a Major Nelson challenge room.
Wow.
And so I am actually in the game. And I will, you can actually go in there, and I'm not going to do it right now. I'll show you later, but there's an 8-bit representation of me and so forth. So it's a special.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I want to thank the guys. We talked about it a little bit in the interview.
That needs
so
to
you
be.
So you didn't know this, did you?
That needs the 8-bit representation of you. That needs to be your avatar on Facebook.
Does that need to be my gamer card picture? Should we get that made into a photo?
That would be, yeah, totally.
So I will show this to you later. But you weren't even aware of this, because I've been working on this for about 10 or 12 months.
I'm looking at the screen and I'm going, whoa.
Yeah, you think that's my gamer card, but no, that's actually the level.
Nice.
That's where the gamer tag is. So I'll show you that one later. Go back here to the beginning. So yeah, so I wanted to tell you about that. But Bionic Commando's Rearmed, well, we talked about that during the interview. Braid, I've been playing that. You finally got a chance to play that.
I have been playing a lot of Braid. Braid is a great game.
Yeah.
It is completely deserving of the rewards it's getting in reviews and on Metacritic.
Most people are having
having an experience with it, kind of like they had with Portal, where they don't. It takes like a little bit to go, whoa. The lights start clicking in their head. Click, click, click.
Boom. Well, like you and I have been talking about for the last week or so, it's one of those games where you play it, you get stuck, and you need to walk away from it for a little bit.
Right.
And for me, it's usually I need to sleep on it, and then the next day I go back to it, and it's like boom, 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 and I solve a whole bunch of problems that had completely stumped me the night before.
Right.
And now this is going way back. I don't think any game has done that to me so much in 20 years. The games that it reminds me of...
Yes.
Not everyone knows. There was actually basically a second Zork trilogy.
There was?
So there's Zork 1, 2, and 3. And then there were some Zork games that didn't quite fit in the trilogy, like Zork Zero. But Infocom followed up the Zork trilogy with Enchanter,
right.
Sorcerer, right. and Spellbreaker.
Oh, I remember those.
And those were the last games that got me twisted up in puzzles Braid does.
They had the greatest packaging in those games, remember?
The packaging was phenomenal. And there was this one problem in... It was in either Enchanter or Sorcerer, I don't remember which, where there was this... basically, it was an egg that you had to put together just right, and it had like a little... like a music box kind of thing inside it.
Right.
And if you put it together wrong, it broke. And I remember in... I think it was junior high, spending like weeks working on this puzzle.
But you have to remember,
there was no game facts back
then. Well, not only that, but there's no graphical representation.
Right. It was all text.
It was all text.
And I would sleep on it for a day or two and then come back and beat my head against it for an hour or two and eventually get through it.
Right.
And that's exactly what Braid has done to me. It's frustrating as heck at times, but then when you figure it out, it's like, oh, yes, now I get it.
Yeah.
And it's... really rewarding.
It's been a lot of fun. Braid and Jonathan talked a little bit. I love the music, which
yes.
is not original music. It's actually available. You can go purchase it, and I'm going to go buy all the music.
It's on Zune Marketplace, right?
Yes, it's on Zune. It's on the iTunes Marketplace as well.
Okay.
So I should put links up to those if you could send
Absolutely.
Those to me.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. We talked about Bionic Commando Rearmed. You want to talk about... What do you got?
Geometry Wars 2.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
So... I am a huge Geometry Wars fan.
Yes.
And the instant GW2 came out, I was having a ball with it.
Right.
And just like most of the people around here, I got into the, oh, I've got to go unlock all the levels. I want some achievements.
Right.
Oh, now I'm going to start working my way up the leaderboard and battling my friends.
Right.
For at least a week now, I have done nothing in Geometry Wars 2 but go for the treaty achievement.
Which is, explain it to those that don't know.
So there's a mode in Geometry Wars 2 called King. And think King of the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these circular zones on the level, and there's three at a time. And you can only shoot when you're in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to shoot the bad guys, clear a path, and run from your zone.
Run like hell to the next one.
In each zone, once you activate it by going inside, it starts collapsing. So
right.
it's only good for a few
Limited
seconds.
Limited time, right.
The treaty achievement, it's kind of like pacifism in the original Geometry Wars. You need to activate 30 zones without killing a single enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So... three times now, I've activated 29 of 30 and died while going for the 30th.
Ooh.
I had a little incident at work Friday morning. So it's been gorgeous here the last few days.
Yes, it has.
So I come in Friday morning. It's sunny. I had the windows down, playing the stereo. I'm in a good mood. Come into my office, and my normal routine is plug my Zune into my 360,
yes.
turn my 360 on and log in, and turn my laptop on and let it boot and start Outlook and everything up. So while this happens, a couple of my coworkers come in and we're kind of chatting, and one of them asked me, hey, did you get that achievement yet? I'm like, no, but I'm going to get it right now. So I got the music up kind of loud.
Yep.
I'm in the zone.
Yep.
I fire up Geometry Wars. I get to 29, my first play through, and I'm heading towards the zone. It spawned maybe halfway across the screen, and I'm thinking, I got it. I got it. I got it. Couple of bad guys spawn basically right in front of me and kill me pixels away from that 30th zone.
Like, that hurts.
On the little 24-inch LCD in my office that I play on, mm-hmm. I was like a half inch at most away from being
you were
in
there.
The zone.
You were there.
I had it. I screamed. I threw the controller across my desk. I kicked the box under my desk a couple of times. The guys quietly left my office.
As well they should.
I'm just sitting there stewing, and a couple minutes later, somebody walks by. Did somebody die in here?
Yeah.
I am so frustrated, but I cannot play anything else in Geometry Wars 2 until I get this achievement, which is a problem. So Not When was in your office when I came over to record.
So Not When is the general manager. So he's like everybody's boss on Xbox Live.
Right.
And this guy plays games hardcore. In fact, he's the man responsible for getting Geometry Wars 2 on the platform,
yeah,
getting the Portal sequel, which will come later this year, to arcade. He's kind of like, he's a big deal around here.
Yes, and he's one of the few people who's been here longer than I have.
Right.
He was at Xbox Live when I got here.
So Not When wanders into my office, probably once a day, comes down here. What's going on with the community? And I debrief him, kind of the give him the touch points.
Yep.
And that's kind of why he comes down. I think that's more of an excuse because he wants to come down and play his games. Now, he has a console in his office.
Of course.
But he's, you know, he wants to get out of his office for a few minutes. He comes down here. And I could tell by the look in his eye, I'm like, you want to play Geometry Wars, don't you? He's like, yeah. So I give him the, so I give him my controller, sign in. I'm doing some work. You come over. And he's basically now outscored himself on the leaderboard with my gamer tag.
Right. And
He's furious.
And he's furious because not only has he just had his best ever game under your gamer tag.
Right.
But in this particular mode, even this score as Major Nelson is behind mine.
Right. Right.
And he was not happy about that at all. So, therefore, he proceeded just to tick me off because I was like, oh, I'm still ahead of you.
Right.
To get you 3, 4, 5 achievements.
Yeah.
And in the one mode that I was having the most trouble with in Geometry Wars 2, Waves.
Right.
He decided, you know, I need to get Major way ahead of you on the leaderboard.
And
for
he
this.
Did.
And, like, doubled my score.
Right, like that.
And the really frustrating thing is until I get the stupid treaty achievement,
right,
I can't bring myself to go get back ahead of you.
You
so
need, you for, need to. A few days, I'll be ahead of you. Now,
yeah.
One of the other arcs, we're talking about the Summer of Arcade, and one of the other arcade games that got released was the Fable 2 pub games.
Oh, yes.
Which I've been enjoying. Those are just, the guys at Carbonated Games did those, and they're just really high-quality games.
And we should remind people that the pub games, if you're going to play Fable 2, this allows you to earn some gold for your character before Fable comes out.
Right. Now, or, as would happen with me...
negatively earned gold,
your debt carries over. Let me tell you what happened.
Best story ever.
I posted this story on my blog. I think it was last Thursday. I have an Xbox 360 in my office at home, my home office. So I was doing some work and I was playing the pub games. And I think I took the dog for a walk or something. I just pressed pause. Took the dog for a walk.
The whatever. Kind of thing you do all the time. I'll right. be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, let me just
I'm not
press
gonna
pause.
Turn it off.
Let me just get it. So I haven't been doing well at the pub games, but I did okay. I was about 1,000 gold pieces ahead. Well, I come back and my wife is in the office and she's sitting in the chair and she's playing the pub games. I'm like, well, first of all, my wife is not a gamer. I'm like, oh, this is weird.
Right.
I said, what are you doing? And she's like, ignores me because she's all into the game. I said, what are you doing? She says, I'm playing. You know, she's completely laser locked.
She's got the addiction.
Right. She's laser locked on the screen. I said, oh. I said, how you doing? She says, I don't know. I'm in debt. And I'm like, what do you mean you're in debt? She says, yeah, I'm about 6,000 in debt. I said, 6,000 what? She says, I don't know, 6,000 things. I said, well, it's gold. I said, we have a little problem if you're in debt. She's like, well, what's the problem? She's still playing. She's now going through. She's doing spinner box. She's doing the fortune touch. She's doing them all. She's just bouncing around having fun. She's pressing A like mad. She says, well, what's the problem? I said, well, you know, this game... I said, do you remember the game I played on the original Xbox, Fable? She says, yeah, the one where you used to kick the chickens. Could you just be able to kick the chickens?
I said, I love that that's what she remembers.
Yeah, I said, yeah, that's the one. I said, well... And then right before I could even explain any further, she says, yeah, this game kind of reminds me of it because it's got the same music. I said, yeah, it is the same music because these are the pub games that you're going to be able to play in Fable 2, which comes out later this year. She's like, oh, that's cool. I said, yeah, but what's not cool is the fact that I'm in debt. She says, why does it matter? I said, because I can take that any gold that I earn or the debt and bring it to Fable 2. She's like, oh. Oh. She says... Well, we're in debt now. I said, no, we're not in debt. I said, you're in debt. She says, well, what are we going to do? I said, what are we going to do? I said, what are you going to do? I said, right now, I'm in debt because of you. So she kind of says, yeah, that kind of sucks. She hands me the controller and walks out. She says, I'm going out. I'll see you later. Oh, my God. So now I have to spend some time before the game releases in October to get out of debt. So thank you. Thanks to my beautiful wife.
When you IM'd me the link to that,
yeah,
oh wow, we were laughing so hard at that. That's a great story.
So anyway, I'm gonna
go, Mrs. Major Nelson.
Yeah, so I will. I'm gonna work on that. So But she liked. I was actually more impressed that she was playing the game. She likes. She actually. She's. You know. When I went on a cruise in March, the cruise ship we were on had a casino, and she's really good at roulette.
Really?
Yeah. Like she went down to roulette with like $50 and came up 2 hours later with like $350.
Nice.
So she's really good with roulette. Anyway, so I'm gonna see if we can harness her roulette goodness and bring her into. I think it's
worth a shot.
Keystone or whatever that game is. Yeah. So anyway, that's my Fable 2 story. Hey, did you know the Tiger Woods PGA Tour 09 demo is available now?
I saw that.
Did you play it? It's got three holes. You can play that.
I did not play it. I'm not a big golfer. But
really?
No.
I took a day off last week. I don't really talk about this, but I took a day off and I went to the driving range and hit some balls.
Really?
I had 120 balls.
You never mentioned you went to the driving range.
Yeah.
You were offline and I sent you mail and I got oof. And other than the fact that there was a typo in your oof, which I had to point out because it was funny, I was like, where is he? What? And you were just off the grid.
Yeah, I just decided to take, just sometimes I just had to take 5 or 6 hours, and I went out and did a few things and went out to the golf driving range. There's one here in Redmond. And hit some balls, had a great time.
Nice.
Just focused. Tch, tch, tch,
one after the other, one after the other, after the other.
I got a pretty good long game. I got to tell you that. Uh-huh. Short game, not so much.
Right.
All right, we're gonna stop now because we have to do name the game. So let's go ahead and this is the name of the game from our last show, which was a couple weeks ago. All right, that name of the game was the game that we were just talking quite a bit about, Geometry Wars 2.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. Congratulations to Blue Devils, with lots of threes and E's, as usual, because the listeners and Xbox.
We should point out the winner of the 360 console, he had no leet speak in his name.
You're right, he did not.
I'd like to thank him for that.
So, congratulations, he grabbed, Blue Devils grabs himself a Turtle Beach Air Force One X1 headset. Congratulations. And then we have another name of the game, which I will play right now. If you think you know what that game is, it's an Xbox 360 or an original Xbox game, send me an email, major@xbox.com. Please put in the subject line what your guess is for that. What game is that from? What sound does that game come from? And I
think I know this one.
And I don't do demos.
That's right.
No demos, no betas. It's only things that are released on the Xbox or original Xbox platform that are available for purchase.
It's Xbox 101 time, isn't it?
Is it? It is Xbox 101 time. You know how I know that?
How do you know that?
Because the musicians are strolling in to play your intro music.
Do we need to make room?
Yeah, here they come.
Xbox 101, this time with E and Major Nelson. Yeah.
Xbox 101 for this week. This one seems particularly appropriate given the amount of time we've been talking about the Summer of Arcade and some of the amazing games that have come out in the last couple of weeks.
Timely, one would say.
Very timely, which is actually what made me think of it. Amazing how that works. So, from your dashboard, go to your Games tab. Go to Games Library. And at the very bottom of the screen when you get into Games Library, there's a tab called Auto Downloads. This is if you're a games junkie, an amazing tab. Basically, what this means is every time you go into the games library section, if this is on, it will automatically download the trial games for you. You don't have to go in and click each one. You don't have to remember that, hey, it's new game day. They will just come down to your console automatically.
Yay!
And this is great whether you just want to try them or if you're intending to buy them, because remember, when you convert a demo game to the full game, you're just downloading the license. That just takes a second.
Little key that unlocks.
Right. So the game itself, whether it's a few megs or 150 megs, at that point, it's already downloaded. So you're up and playing in seconds instead of in minutes.
Yeah, and you don't have to, you know, when you download these arcade titles, there's no install. You just play.
Yes. And it's nice to get, I like getting that little pop-up that reminds me that, oh yeah, this came out today. You know, I'm focused on, well, I wouldn't see it on Geometry Wars 2 because I have to always set myself the busy so I don't get notifications when I'm playing that game. But when I'm playing other arcade games, you get the notification that, hey, Bionic Commando's Rearm has just downloaded. Oh, that's right. I wanted to go play that and go try it out. And if you like it, buy it.
Yeah. So that's a great Xbox 101 tip. Thank you very much.
Ta-da.
You, normally about this time when we talk about gadgets, you want to talk about gadgets?
Let's talk about gadgets.
It's a summer of gadgets.
Is it?
I'll tell you what I did get. A friend of mine who works here at Microsoft got me a loaner, and it was a Linksys router that had a wireless Sprint wireless card in it. It's all contained.
Built into the router?
Built into the router. So I took it with me on the road, and we were down at the Rose Bowl. I didn't have to worry about connectivity like I had that problem in Los Angeles at E3.
Oh, yeah.
So we just all plugged. We all basically had the four or five people that were working with us for Inside Xbox basically just signed on to this access point, and boom, we were all out. It was great.
Nice.
No problems at all. Perfect signal. So
anywhere you're getting Sprint service, you're up and running with wireless internet.
Literally within like 30 seconds.
Nice. That's handy.
So we used that thing, and it was really, really, really helpful. So I think I need a new phone. I have this Motorola Q phone. I kind of like this phone.
I'm waiting for a new phone that's supposed to be out in a couple of weeks.
Well, you're getting the iPhone.
No, I'm not.
What do you mean you're not?
I'm not getting an iPhone.
I got to tell you something. You know, it's got exchange support, and I have it on my Touch at home, right. My iPod Touch. The exchange support is kind of weird. I mean, it works, but it's like it takes forever for like messages to load in. I don't know if they're like they're. It's almost like they're not loading in locally. It's weird.
I have no idea. I have been reading the stories about the iPhone and 3G, all the rumors, and European cell phone companies saying, hey, it's not our fault, you're getting bad 3G perf, and blah, 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 blah.
Something's wrong with the radio stack, huh?
I don't think anyone knows yet whether it's the radio stack, whether it's the chip, whether it could be nothing. I don't know.
I got my MacBook Pro back.
Oh, the Genius guys fixed it up for
you? Yeah, well, actually, it was. Remember, this was all...
Dented.
Yeah, so they sent it back, and fortunately I got it back in time so I can edit the show, because I edit the show on it. So
nice. I'm actually about to buy myself a new laptop for home.
What are you gonna get?
So I'm waiting for everyone to announce the new gaming laptop models. So right. Intel just announced their new chipset, basically the next generation of the Centrino platform.
Right.
So I'm waiting for the gaming laptops to come out based on that before I buy.
Right.
They've announced, like, I was watching Dell just announced a whole new line of business laptops based on that.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I want the gaming one. I want the one with the big fat, you know, GPU. There are some PC games I want to play, but I want a new laptop. I want the ability to kind of play, you know, wherever, take it with me, take it on trips, all that good stuff. So I'm maybe a month away from having something.
Well, I've got the Lenovo, and I love that, the T60P. I took that with me on the road.
Those are nice. They've just come out with a whole bunch of new stuff. Not only Intel having their new CPU and chipset line, but ATI and NVIDIA both have just announced a whole bunch of new chips. So even though I could get a pretty good deal on the last gen one right now, I've seen some really nice sales actually this summer. It's like, no, this stuff gets obsolete so fast. I'd rather just, you know, wait a couple of weeks and get something that's current that won't feel too slow for an extra couple of months.
I don't know if we talked about this on the last show a couple of weeks ago. Had the XM Sirius merger been finalized at that point?
No, I think that happened while you were in LA for Madden, didn't it?
I don't remember.
But it is finally done. They are now XM Sirius Corporation or something like that.
So now we can finally, because I'm on, each week I do a radio show. I'm sitting on a radio show called Level Up on Maxim Channel 108. And the big question is I'm trying to find out if that's going to be on XM as well for all you XM subscribers.
It's going to be interesting to see how that really works. And once they figure all that out, I will finally update my Sirius radio for my 4 or 5 year old one. So
I have a friend of mine, an engineer that I used to work with in radio many years ago, is the head of their broadcast division. And I talked with him frequently, and he's been kind of telling me what's going on. It's a crazy setup they have there.
Oh, they do. The amount of different channels that they crank out.
Well, it's just all the music that's recorded. That's basically, he's responsible for the digital storage. So all the music, you know, it's sitting on files some places. Right. I think they're MP2 files. They're just sitting there and they're,
MP2?
I want to say MP2.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. They're not MP3. But because they sound good.
Yeah.
So
I would assume they're very high bit rate.
I'm excited to finally have that. Hopefully. But Mel Karmazin said that the radios are not going to be out until for another 9 months or so.
Yeah, 6 to 9 months, I said.
Yeah, six to nine months.
So we're missing Christmas.
So that means, you're going to come to CES this year?
Probably. I've been to CES last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so CES will be, maybe that's when we'll see something. Speaking of, back up before CES, Tokyo Game Show is coming up in October.
Yes.
And I will be going to that.
And so finish up TGS, and then we have to back up a little more.
Okay.
So what's TGS? You're going, this is third, fourth year in a row?
I think it's the fourth year in a row.
I really, someday, I want to go to TGS.
Well, I'm gonna
so
and I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go hang out. I know Cheapy D, who is from Cheap Ass Gamer. He invited me last year to do Sumo, and I think I'm gonna be miss the Sumo season because I think it goes to the beginning of September or middle of September. But I'm gonna see him. I'm coming. I'll tell you right now. I am Cheapy. You and I are going shopping for toilet seats. I'm telling you right now.
I want to go shopping in Akihabara.
Yeah,
that place looks like just gadget freak heaven.
Oh, of course it is.
I want to go there and just buy so much stuff.
It's kind of scary.
But I've never been to Japan. Been to Europe a few times. Africa, never Japan. And I just
you've been to Africa.
Well, yeah, not much, but I was in Morocco.
That's still Africa.
I was in Spain. We took a ferry over.
Oh, so you touched the continent.
It was more than anything. It was to get my passport stamped.
Okay.
You know, it was fun. I was like 10 at the time.
Okay.
Anyways, never been to Japan. Want to go. Really, really want to go to TGS. I think if you're a hardcore gamer, that's just one of those things you want to go to at least once.
Yeah.
I should have asked Notwin when he was in here. We got to figure out a business reason for me to get over
there.
Yeah,
we got to get you over there. So, all right. So, we want to back it up and talk PAX?
Absolutely. PAX is
coming up
almost here.
Yeah, it's almost here. It's coming up at the end of August. In fact, it may be already on or over by the time you listen to this show.
So for those of you who don't know, PAX is the Penny Arcade Expo.
Yep.
It's here in Seattle. And it is, think of this as the gaming show for gamers.
Right.
It's not about presenting things to the press or to publishers or to platforms. This is about gamers.
Yeah, this will be in downtown Seattle at the Washington State Convention Center, August 29th through the 31st. Now, Jonathan Colton's going to be there. I can't wait to meet him. I've had him on the show. He's the man behind behind the Portal song.
Yes, still alive.
There's going to be a bunch of folks doing that. I think Ken Levine, also a friend of this show, is going to be doing the keynote.
He's doing the keynote. I should point out to people, three-day pass is only about $50.
Are they sold out yet?
I don't think they sell out, do they? No. I don't think they've ever sold out, but certainly attendance year over year keeps going up ridiculously.
So we've that'll be there. Now, I don't even think I've told you this. I'm working on, it's highly possible that at PAX, I may be doing a demo of the new Xbox experience.
Ooh, people
special
would like that.
Limited demos, like maybe one or two a day for a couple days. That's it.
That'd be cool.
I'm going to come down there. I'm working with the right people. I'm going to come down there with live code, and we're going to show you what it looks like. Basically, it's going to be the first public unveiling of this anywhere.
Nice. I have to admit, one of the things I love about PAX, beside the fact that, hey, it's in our backyard,
right,
it's about gamers, and right, I get to see so many of my friends that I only see once a year, but I don't work PAX. I get to be a gamer.
Right.
I get to wander around and talk to people and look at cool stuff and buy T-shirts. And
yeah, this fun. Year, normally I do I host a panel, and I decided not to do that this year because I've done it for 3 or 4 years already, and this year I decided to take off so that I can do these demos of the new Xbox experience.
Very cool.
For everybody. And those will be open to the public. Those will be at the Microsoft booth, and when I get more details, I'll tell you what time they are.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm working on.
And there's every year there's a lot of cool stuff. Like, you know, previous years the Castle Crasher guys were there selling their figurines with previews of the game.
Yep.
The last year I remember, I can't remember the company who makes them now, but the guys who manufacture the giant scarabs for HeroScape style gaming.
Right.
They had one of the giant scarabs on display,
right,
which had only been shown at Comic-Con before, I think.
Right.
There's always cool stuff. Just you wander around the floor, you're like, oh my God, what is that?
Are you, so that's coming up. You and I are also maybe on the next show, we'll talk about, we're considering doing a meet and greet.
We got to do a meet and greet. We'll figure something out. The challenge is finding a place that's big enough.
Right.
Because there's tens of thousands of people descending on, you know, this area in Seattle, and finding a place, like, we'd love to go to Red Mill. It's our favorite burger joint. Red Mill only holds like 40 people.
Yeah.
There's no way we can.
And if we came in there with like 200 people, they'd be so pissed at us that we would never be allowed back.
Grill Chick would be just senseless.
Yeah, it would be bad. It's bad news.
Yeah.
So Lithion's coming out.
Yep, absolutely.
Lithion's going to come out. He works on the blog.
He's staying on, you know, some flat spot at my house. We haven't figured that out yet.
It's going to be your place, so he'll be out here. So maybe we'll have him on a show. Maybe we'll record another show in the car like we did last time. Now, are you watching? I brought the NBC Olympics set up. Are you watching any of the Olympics?
Oh yeah.
What are you watching?
So swimming, we've been catching all the Michael Phelps drama.
Right.
The 4x100 relay, the finish of that,
right,
was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Well, and the story about how, you know, number one, you had the Frenchman who, you know, had made the claim about they're here to smash the Americans.
Right.
And then the final swimmer for the Americans beat his own personal record by, I think, over a full second.
Wow.
In that winning race, where he just came out of nowhere and managed to win it for the U.S. That was amazing. I've been watching gymnastics, the road cycling race, beach volleyball, a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay. Which one?
Big fan of beach volleyball. Me.
Okay, are you a big fan of beach volleyball or the people playing beach volleyball?
I'm a big fan of beach volleyball.
Okay. The thing that amazes me is the number one team in the world, Misty May and Carrie Walsh, they've now won like 105 matches in a row.
Right.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
I mean, and Carrie Walsh she's got what looks to be a fairly serious shoulder injury.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They dominate. It's ridiculous.
Sorry, I'm distracted by the photos over here.
Yeah, stop. But no, there has been a lot of really great stuff to watch at the Olympics. It's been very exciting.
One of the mistakes I made was I had my TiVo record the opening ceremonies. I don't think I told you the story.
No.
And TiVo had this really cool thing where it just had, like, you can go into this section that they basically programmed special, and you could say, record, these are the sports I'm interested in. Beach volleyball.
Nice.
And it would automatically
record those ones.
And it would go out and find it. You didn't have to, like, go through the schedule and find them.
Very cool.
So I said, I want to record the opening ceremonies, and sure enough, it recorded them. But because we're so close, I'm on Comcast, because we're so close to Canada, I got the CBC version, the Canadian Broadcasting version, which was not in high def.
Oh.
So I was really bummed. I sat down one night, like a few days after, like over the weekend, and I was like, oh. Anyway, I was really kind of irritated. So then, that's the famous photo. So we're looking at these photos. There's one of President George Bush. And what was he doing there?
He was playing volleyball with Misty May.
Well, there's another photo
I know the one you're thinking
of. Okay, that's the photo where he's reading something on her backside.
So there is a ton of great coverage up on, I think it's NBCOlympics.com.
Right.
So there's a partnership between Microsoft and NBC, and you can stream all sorts of stuff. And there's photos. You could spend days poking around watching stuff. I've watched that one swimming race a couple of times. It's just amazing because I was sure the U.S. had lost. It was, to me, that's what I will remember about this Olympics.
Right.
It won't be, Michael Phelps winning however many golds he does. It won't be anything else. It won't be the politics. It'll be that one race.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, I digress. Where were we? All right. So
great.
I think we're almost done,
Are we almost done?
I think we're almost done. So,
wait. No, we have to celebrate your achievement.
Which one?
You finally broke 19,000 gamers.
I did.
You're almost to 20. Come on, Major. You can do it.
Look, I'm just playing to have some fun here, man.
No, you're not. I know very well that, not the word I was about to use, but I'm going to look one of these days and you're going to have tried really hard to catch up to me. And that's why I make sure I always have over a 1,000 gamer score lead on you.
Right.
So it's going to take, you can't pop in one cheap game. Of course, you've already played Avatar and gotten the 1,000 gamer score.
Right.
And catch up to me.
Right. Well, I'm going to wait until you, maybe when you go on vacation someplace.
Oh, like I'm not going to build up an extra lead before I go on vacation.
All right, we're going to wrap it up right now. I want to thank my friends at Centricom.net, providing MajorNelson.com with a secure and assured hosting environment. Also, thanks to CashFly for caching this show. Thank you very much, guys. All right, do you have any final words, Z? Because we're going to wrap it up now. I hear the music. The music's here. We're going to wrap it up.
I think they're about to boot us out.
Exactly. We're done. So this is Larry Herbeck, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, saying thank you for downloading my show. Have fun, play fair, send feedback.
Or file a complaint.
And we'll talk to you when we talk to you. Bye-bye.
Wait, what?
What?
You don't like Kid Valley?
Kid Valley hamburgers, no, I do not.
Okay, I will admit they're not quite as good as Red Mom.
I find them greasy.
They're not. Their bacon cheeseburger is phenomenal.
I find the place dirty.
Their banana shakes are amazing. If you're not willing to make the trek to Red Mill from where we work, Kid Valley is the best burger on this side of the city.
If you say so.
Did
you see this?
I am the burger.
Did you see this? I bought one of these in...
What is it?
Oh, I'm going to show you in a second. Okay. I bought one of these in California at a CVS pharmacy because I can't find them around here. These are the best chocolate bars ever.
Okay. I have had Harry and David Moose Munch. I didn't know there was a Moose Munch chocolate bar.
The chocolate bar.
I can have?
No, you cannot have.
I can
have. No, you, this is
I can has.
No, you cannot has. So I urge you, anybody who has a CVS pharmacy near you, go buy Harry and David. Those are the guys that do the fruit baskets.
Applets and Cotlets. And you didn't buy me one?
I just bought this one. It is the Moose Munch chocolate bar.
How did you not buy me one?
This is the premium chocolate. I'm telling you, man.
Give me half.
I'm not even opening it yet. I'm not even opening it yet. I got to save it.
Fine.
So that and Toblerone are my favorite chocolates.
Toblerone's pretty good.
Yeah, Toblerone's good.
Did you see this? I'm quite proud of this.
You're wearing a zero punctuation t-shirt.
Yes. These are very cool.
We're big fans of zero punctuation.
We are. Yahtzee.
Everybody is here at the office.
Yeah. And Wednesday, usually, there's a big... Did you see ZP yet?
Yeah.
This is a very cool shirt. I was very excited when I saw they had them.
Where'd you find it?
I think it's called splitreason.com.
Right.
It oddly enough, they're in Canada. But they've got a website. They have all sorts of... gaming t-shirts, and they just announced this line like last week.
I picked up a couple t-shirts when I was at Comic-Con I haven't told you about that I'm going to wear coming up.
What'd you get?
You'll see.
What'd you get?
No, and I'm not going to talk about
it. You didn't get me the Captain America hoodie, did you?
Did you know that hoodies are illegal in the UK now?
What?
The hoodies are illegal.
No.
Yeah, you cannot wear them to a shopping center, to a mall. Did you know that?
You're not allowed to wear a hoodie
in
a mall.
Do you know why?
No.
Security cameras can't see you.
But I can wear a hat?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Somebody was telling me this.
I mean that sounds like one of those security rules that accomplishes absolutely nothing except annoying people.
Yeah, because you're always chilling with your hoodie at the mall.
Well, I wear hoodies a lot. I don't ever put the hood up, but I'm just so I have a pet peeve about this kind of thing, and I follow a lot of security blogs and you know the TSA and all those kind of things.
Is there a TSA
and
blog? Should I be reading it?
There is a TSA blog, and there's lots of blogs about the TSA. But I don't have a problem with security. I have a problem with things that are basically supposed to be secure that in actuality do nothing, but
like?
People act like, oh, this makes us way more secure.
Example?
So here's a great one. So this is probably going to get me on a TSA watch list. I probably shouldn't tell this story, but I read this one a couple of days ago. I don't remember which blog it was on. Might have been Bruce Schneier's security blog. But you know how you can fly now if you've lost your ID?
I didn't know that.
So you can't fly without ID. But if you've lost your ID, you can go to them and say, hey, I've lost my ID. Go through an additional security check. You know,
so this is so if you get to the airport and you don't have your ID.
Now, it's not just this isn't if like you're saying, oh, I'm not willing to show you my ID.
Right.
But I lost my passport. I'm supposed to be somewhere tomorrow.
There.
So there's an additional process you can go through
okay. And
still get on your plane.
Right.
And someone was telling the story of how they'd been through this process. And at the end of it, they wrote on their boarding pass something that, you know, said, hey, when you show this boarding pass, you've got to go through all these extra security checks after they'd verified that this person should be allowed to fly without ID.
Right.
The boarding pass was one of those kind that, you know, you print off at home on your printer.
Right.
So all this person would have had to do is print two.
Right.
And then throw away the one that had written on it, go through the extra security check.
Right.
And present the other one. And
right.
It would have been through.
That's
so a whole bunch of hassle that actually doesn't accomplish anything. That's silly. If you're going to make us more secure, make us more secure.
You know what irritates me? It's talking about TSA.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't irritate me. It's just I'm surprised.
Now you're going to be on the watch list.
No, I am. This is actually really interesting. I'm completely surprised that there is not an epidemic of foot disease in this country.
I was taking a drink when you said that.
Because when I go through the security line, first of all these people are in flip flops.
Right.
And they're all walking around barefoot because they can't wear shoes when they go through the security. You know, the
yep.
metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why is there, and it doesn't look very clean.
Right.
So I'm like, why, there should be an epidemic of foot disease or something.
At least I'm usually wearing, you know,
oh yeah,
I'm
wearing the socks.
Just... there are certain shoes that I don't wear when I fly. I just wear my tennis shoes because like I have shoes similar to the ones you're wearing that have little like metal eyelets.
Right.
And those are such a pain that I don't ever wear those when I fly.
Have you seen the new, I'll have to put a link if I can find it again. It's a laptop bag that you don't have to take the laptop out of the bag.
Yes, it's a special TSA approved
laptop
bag. Which I could see, you know, that I haven't seen the bag, so I don't know how nice it is. But the idea, at least, is that, oh, okay, if that gets me through faster, I'd be willing to look at that.
Yeah, all right. We're going to wrap it up because, we have to. We'll be back next week. Talk to you later.